You're listening to the Loyalty Minute, the show that helps you build better customer loyalty and more valuable user engagement with your host, Rob Gallo.
Welcome, loyal listeners, to another episode of the Loyalty Minute. I'm your host, Rob Gallo, and today I'm very eager and excited to chat with Mark Gutman, the founder of Wild Story. From the time we wake up to the moment we go to bed, we're influenced by branding. What shirt am I going to wear? What car do I drive? What deodorant do I use? Beer do I drink? And on and on. There's a lot of noise out there, and that standing out isn't easy. So starting his career in screenwriting with the Academy Award-winning director Oliver Stone, Mark Gutman blends storytelling, psychology, and design to help brands outsmart their competition. An entrepreneur, speaker, and Instagram social media influencer, Mark helps build brands that stand out and get you noticed. Welcome to the show, Mark. Thanks for joining me.
Rob, thank you so much for having me. You can read that intro anytime. That sounded great. I want to meet that person.
Yeah, he sounds like a fascinating guy.
So yeah, he sounds amazing. Yeah.
For those who don't know who you are, Mark, perhaps you could share a little bit about your history, your background, and how you got to where you are now with Wild Story.
Absolutely. I'll keep it brief. But as you mentioned, my name is Mark Gutman, and today I am a brand strategist. That's what I do. And how did I get here? Well, you know, it was kind of a roundabout path. You know, I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, and nothing really ever happened in Detroit. It was a great upbringing, but nothing ever happened. And so when you're young in Detroit and you have your whole world is defined by film and television, what do you think the greatest place in the world is? California, right? Because like nothing's happened in Detroit. Everything in the movies and on TV is California. And so when you're done with college, you move to California and you decide you want to be a screenwriter. And that's what I did. And I didn't have any ins to that. I didn't come from like some show business family or anything like that. I got out to Hollywood and I just kind of did it the old fashioned way. I put myself in the middle of the industry and took whatever job I could that happened to be a driving film around for a Disney project. I was a runner, and one thing led to another. I just networked and worked really hard. And I found myself one day working, as you mentioned, for the Academy Award-winning director Oliver Stone as his story editor. And up to that point, I had studied screenwriting in college. I had read all the books. I'd even written some screenplays, but I realized really quickly that I knew nothing about story. And so I learned everything in a crash course, really, really the hard way, you know, take my lumps like on the job. And that was amazing. I ended up writing a couple unproduced screenplays for him. I went in to work on a couple movies. One that people might remember is a movie called Osmosis Jones, which fortunately or unfortunately is really reminiscent of the pandemic. It was about a virus that infected Bill Murray's body. And then Chris Rock was a animated immunity white blood cell. That was the big joke in he was running all around Bill Murray's body trying to save him. So I worked on that movie, again learning a ton about story, because an animation story stays up on the wall and you kind of look at every scene over and over and over again, and sometimes too much. That's why sometimes some animation movies aren't so good. They get overworked. And after some time, just decided I wanted to do some other things in my life. I didn't really see myself spending my whole life living in Los Angeles. I grew up in Detroit. I'd always dreamed that I'd come to Colorado. And so I came here to take a little bit of a break. I didn't plan on moving here, but something really, really amazing was happening. And we had this entrepreneur movement happening. And that was before everyone was entrepreneuring this and entrepreneuring that. That was before Gary Vee made it famous. It was this kind of cool startup community. I was like, these people are awesome. These people are way cooler than Hollywood people. They're making real things happen. They're doing really neat things. And as a result, I started a tech business that went, you know, really well. I had that for many, many years. I ultimately ended up selling it, and it was a good outcome for me. But I was never the best entrepreneur. But what I did love to do was marketing and branding. And that always came naturally to me because of my experience in Hollywood. Those are the skill sets that I have. I'm fairly empathetic. I like to write. I like to, you know, see how we can position things and how to communicate better. And that's what really was the heart of that business. It was not that interesting of business, but I was good at branding and marketing. And then people started asking me to help them to do this kind of stuff. And over the years, we figured it out. Initially, it was it was really bad. A lot of engagements ended poorly. And neither side was happy. And that was because people would say, hey, can you help us tell our story? And we'd say, yeah. I'd say, yeah, sure, that'd be great. And I was super excited, but neither of us really knew what that meant. You know, like everyone has a different definition of storytelling, especially as it applies to business. Maybe not so much in the movie business. And that was my training, a pretty, you know, formal 3-act structure, things like that. But in business, we use this term very loosely, storytelling, brand story. We tell my story, telling a story on Instagram, blah, blah, blah. And it could mean all these different things. It could mean a keynote. It could mean our brand story. It could mean our values. It could mean our purpose. So we'll talk about that a little bit later today. But over the years, I started to figure out, the storytelling that I love to do and that I think is the most impactful for businesses is around brand. And so we evolved the business into what it is today, which is a brand strategy and design studio for businesses. And really what that means is that, you know, we're on a mission. We're not here to make logos. We're not on a mission to create your identity, although we do some of that because that helps in the communication process. Really for us, brand storytelling is all about helping your business to sell more stuff to more people for a higher price for more years. That's really the objective of what we're trying to do with brand storytelling. Certainly not in a transactional way, in a real authentic way, but for us, branding and brand strategy is all about selling. It's all about building businesses, and that's where we're at today.
Nice. So let me ask you then, what brand out there do you think has told the best story in the last 2 decades?
Well, the best story, I mean, you look at the brands that are year in, year out, the number one brands in the world. I mean, Apple tells an amazing story. They tell this story of, and they're always the poster child of like, hey, we're creative. We think different. If you use our stuff, you're super cool. And, you know, and they've done a great job at positioning themselves against other competitors in their space. And I think that, you know, I look all over for amazing examples of good storytelling or how to become a great brand. And really, and I think this is what Apple does, this is like what Amazon does, is the hallmark of a great brand, and it gets back to the title of your podcast, it's all about finding and meeting these unmet needs for customers, right? Because that's when we really feel this aha moment. That's when we really feel like, oh my gosh, they get me.
Yeah.
They understand me. They care about me. That all usually comes out of an unmet need. I can give you an example, you know, so like I used to spend right now, if you're watching on video, we're at our studio. We call this the Happy House. It's a converted mining shack in outside of Boulder, Colorado. But before we had this office space, we were involved in co-working. And even like many, many years ago when I had a different kind of job, there'd always be this like tension around the kitchen, you know, like at the workspace. Like people would be like, you know, putting signs up, do your dishes. There'd be all CC emails going out to the entire organization. We're not your mom. Do your dishes, blah, blah, blah. If you can't keep the kitchen clean, we're not going to provide this service, right? And it was like awful. And it was all this tension. And then I'd be like at co-working spaces and I would go to the kitchen, but the dishwasher was full or running and you'd open it. And like, it was just right. All the things I don't want to have to deal with in my day at work, it's this thing. Yeah. And one day I'm at a WeWork and I'm visiting. And I go and I get a cup of coffee. Love WeWork. You know, I mean, I know they have a lot of problems with the business structure, but they've done a great job with the spaces and everything. And I'm in WeWork and I'm hanging out and I have to go take my coffee cup to the kitchen. A little bit of anxiety comes over me because I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to deal with this whole kitchen thing at this workspace. And you know what? They have someone there. And that person just grabs my cup and puts it in a tub. And they were like, we got this. And right there, I was like, oh, and it was like this, like, right? And that unmet need. I didn't realize actually until that point how much of a problem that conflict around the kitchen was at all these other brands. But WeWork saw what I needed as a customer, right? And I think we're going to talk about this. This is the hallmark of an amazing brand. This is something that everybody can do for zero money to improve their business. Mm. Is to understand what their customer's going through, what they really care about. Because, you know, WeWork is in the, they think they're in the business of providing office space. And they are, right? To some degree. I mean, we rent space. But they're also in the business of making me comfortable, of making me feel taken care of in the office space. So when I get there, I can do my best work. And, you know, that's the hallmark of a great
I think they did that. But based on the fact that, you know, I know you said an unmet need, but it was probably something deeply rooted emotionally that you were like having the angst and the anxiety about experiences in the past of the nonsense of having to clean your dishes and all that crap. And they alleviated that. It puts that brand in your mind in such a way that, you know, again, the name of the podcast is The Loyalty Minute. We talk about brand loyalty, customer experience. So that experience that you had creates that sort of feeling emotionally, what it sounds like to me, that you have for WeWork over, let's say, a Regis or somebody else, to name another name.
Totally. And that's the I am talking
so,
about it.
So, you know, when you talk about brand storytelling, they're telling their story by how they do what they do, not necessarily just what they do, but how they do it. It's probably just as important.
100%. And, you know, when we get into brand storytelling, it's kind of a little bit of a big framework because a lot of people think it's one or two things. And that's something that I want to clarify here on this show. It's a lot of things. It's how you do it. It's what you believe in. It's your purpose. It's your values. That's the internal brand. But it's also actually how you go to market, how you show up, how those things show up when you meet with customers and how that comes out in the customer experience. And all these things contribute to your brand story. And it's a little bit more nebulous than I think people like. People want this like very clean, like hero's journey framework. Here's your brand story. And it doesn't always work that way.
Yeah. All right. So let's say on a personal level, Mark, let's hear a story about a brand that you're loyal to as a consumer. And why? Like, not necessarily just the reason that you're loyal, but like a story. If you could think of an example, like before we hit the record button, I was telling you about this story of the guy flying from Australia to England, and my listeners have heard it 10 times on the air. But so, you know, what sort of brands is Mark Gutman excited about? Loyal to?
Yeah, and so I mean, I'm loyal to a lot of brands, you know, and I think that in this day and age, we don't so much buy brands. We align with brands. We join brands. We become believers of brands. There's all sorts of things that kind of, it can jump all around to what I'm into at the moment. Right now, I'm kind of getting into running and training to run for a marathon. And so I'm into Garmin. I'm a Hoka person, things like that. But, you know, I hope this doesn't, you know, beat this topic to death. But actually, the brand that comes first to mind is, for me, is United. And I fly a ton, and I fly both for pleasure and for business. United gets a horrible rap. They've done some horrible things. They dragged people off of planes. They've treated me really poorly at times. I'm a very frequent flyer. But 1 year, I'm traveling with my family to Antigua, I think it was. We had this. We fly from Denver to Newark, and then Newark into Antigua. And it's a late flight. I think we left like, you know, it's like middle of the night. I'm groggy. I'm in Newark. It's a crazy airport. We're about to board the plane for Antigua. And I open up the bag, and the folder that I keep all the passports in is gone. Can't find it.
Ugh.
I lost all my family's passports. 100% my fault, right? So we're trying to track it down. We're trying to figure it out. We go to the United desk, and they send us to like this little like kind of special United desk where there are these people that just handle customer complaints. And the woman behind the desk, this group of women, could not have been more accommodating. They could not have bent over backwards. They put us up in a hotel at their expense. They rerouted our flights. They made everything happen. They were chasing down passports. They were helping us out. The short version is we never found the passports. We were stuck in New York City. We go to New York. We get emergency passports, and we carry on. And ultimately the passports did show up, but that was too late. And a couple of things that happened there for me with United. One, that those women were so accommodating. And I was like, I kept being like, this is like, I know that I screwed up, right? But they were trying to fix the problem. They were trying to help us get these emergency passports. It also gave me the strength and sort of the positive mental attitude to continue on. I think if I was having friction at that point, there's no way I would have continued that vacation for my wife, for my kids, for everybody. And I felt like a total heel, right? Like I felt like I had ruined everybody's vacation. And at the end of the day, we were able to turn that negative with the help of United into like one of the greatest Gutman family positives. In terms of that vacation, we had a couple extra days in New York City that were like unplanned. It was like really fun. And for that, I will always be, well, I can't say always, right? Because you can never be absolute, but I am pretty loyal to United and I will give them a lot of grace. I will give them a lot of slack because I know that at least in my heart, when things really get bad, that they'll step up for me and help me out.
That's awesome. So I have to ask, where did you stay in Antigua? Because I lived there for 10 years.
Cool. I think we stayed at a resort called the St. James.
Sure, the St. James Club.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Rob Barrett's organization. He runs it. Yeah, we lived down there for 10 years. It was great. My kids grew up there. They were 3 and 5 when we moved down. Yeah.
Back in the good old days. I love that. Love that place. That was a great island, and I'd love to go back.
Yeah. All right, let's switch gears a little bit and put on your marketing hat. You're a professional in the industry. You tell stories to help brands stand out from the crowd. When you think about customers, so now you, Mark Gutman, as the founder of Wild Story, you have an agency. How do you think about attracting and retaining customers with you, clients, and keeping them loyal in your agency?
Keeping them loyal to us?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so a couple things. First and foremost, we attract clients by being specialists, by being experts in what we do. So we're experts in brand strategy. We typically focus on recreation, outdoor, lifestyle kind of brands. Although that doesn't mean like, I mean, we work with tech brands. We work with other professional services companies and things like that. It's just in order to be efficient with our marketing, we don't kind of spray all over the place. You know, people come to us, and if it's a good fit, of course, we'd love to help them. And that's the first thing. You know, we let our beliefs and our values filter through. So we, you know, we're very much a lifestyle type of company. We believe in the environment. Those are the types of clients we attract. But then we do a couple other things. We try to really think about, how can we help our customers? So we go through a very specific process called design thinking. But what that process really is all about is taking a step back. And when a client comes to us and says, I need a brand strategy, taking a step back and saying, you may need a brand strategy, but let's really find out what the problem is. Because we want to be solving a real business problem for a client, not just giving them, you know, because a lot of people think, oh, I need a new logo. And, you know, and if you just rush to do that logo, you might not really be addressing the real problem. And what that allows us to do is that elevates us from being just an executor to a real valuable asset in the business. And then we're always looking for ways just to wow clients and to wow customers. And here's something really simple we do. So if you are a new client with us over a certain amount of revenue, most likely after you sign your contract and you onboard maybe a couple weeks later, you're going to get a beautiful package in the mail. And in that package is going to be most likely a very well-made, awesome chef's knife. And on that chef's knife, it's going to say this tool is handcrafted for Rob Gallo. And, you know, if you have a partner, their name, maybe you're single, whatever, but nothing about our brand. Our brand's nowhere on that knife. And we send it with a nice kind of cheeky card that says something to the effect of, thanks for carving out a spot for us on your team. We're really looking forward to working with you. What I can tell you is almost every Saturday night, I get a photo from some client who's cooking in the kitchen with that knife, with a glass of wine, and either their partner or their family or a piece of meat or fish or something like that. And I'm getting A, we're wowing them, the customer experience, like, but we're also getting these built-in impressions every time they use that knife. They think of me, they think of our firm, and that's how we stay ahead of them. And we don't, again, our logo's not on it. I don't want my logo on it. It's all about them, because they know where that knife came from.
Sure.
So that's just like one example of something we do that really is fun, and it brings me a ton of joy. Like, I literally every Saturday night, my phone will ding, and I'm like, oh, like, I haven't talked to that client in forever, but they're cooking dinner with their family and thinking of me, and that's pretty awesome.
That is great. I like that story. Interesting. So when you think about some clients that you deal with, I don't know how, you know, you're dealing with brands, I know maybe in the tech space, but even in the spaces that you currently work in, innovation sometimes seems like a dirty word to people. Now, you know, we talk about loyalty programs a lot on this program, building loyalty programs. Points are good, you know, to kind of count the metrics to see how many people are moving up in tiers. You know, the casino industry, from my background, is where it all started. We built a loyalty program from scratch to kind of use it as a litmus test, a measurement of who's doing what, and you can kind of gauge them and gamify them to move up the ladder, right? In your space, though, it's a little bit different, I think. I mean, you probably have clients that come in, but you know, you do something for them. Is it an ongoing process, Mark? Meaning, you know, once you create their story, do they stick with you, or is it a one and done?
It is, and it really depends where that company or that business is in their life cycle. So, for example, if you're what I would call a new to world brand, if you're just launching, of course, you need, you know, your basic brand assets. You need your voice and tone. You need your identity. You need your logo. You need those sorts of things. We also work with a ton of businesses that I like to say have grown up to a certain amount of revenue, you know, a few million dollars in spite of themselves. Typically, it's a strong founder-led business. They're charging. They've hit on something. And then it's at this kind of critical moment where they start to scale, where they start to increase employees, where they start to increase the size of the organization. They look around and like, oh my gosh, all these things that we've been doing from a visual perspective on our social, internally, it kind of looks like a meatball sundae. It looks like it's just all stuck together, you know, and they have to clean the house, reset, like maybe do a remodel of, and sometimes it's a full teardown, you know, it's like a big job. Mm. And then when we work with businesses a little more mature, of course, they've got their purpose, their vision, their values, they've got their brand guidelines, they have their identity, what they are forced to look at and what they're focused on is what you just talked about, innovation, right? It's like, how do we stay relevant? How do we keep going? I mean, you're kind of like always doing this in business, right? Like, you have some success and you do well, but the second you start resting on your laurels, a new entrant comes in and starts to pressure you. And so what we do there is, then we spend a lot of time saying like, well, how can we help you innovate? And that really comes down to like interviewing customers, doing some ethnographic research, watching customers buy. Like, I'm trying to think how to say this without violating confidentiality, but I'm working with a food brand right now. And so they're worried about all these other entrants coming into their space, like a frozen food brand, right? And so some of the things we're doing is we go to the market. We take pictures of all the packaging. We're looking at how people are representing themselves. I'm literally talking to people as they grab the product, a similar product out of the cooler, being like, why'd you choose that, right? And really looking for insights of what do people want? Because one thing I learned in the movie business is tastes are always changing. That's the constant, right? Like, nothing is ever the same. You know, people, you know, the second Hollywood gets lazy and starts just churning out the same movie, you know, sooner or later, you're going to have like $100 million bust because people just change. They want different things. Food tastes change. You look at like what we're eating 10 years ago to what we're eating today, and just the look and the texture and the smells and all that. It's just so different. Like, when you go to a restaurant, and that's happening in every business. People are expecting more. People are expecting, you know, more automation. Whoever would have thought that like renting out, you know, rooms in your house would be a thing.
Yeah.
Whoever thought that like using the spare capacity of your vehicle and your time to drive people around would put taxis out of business, right? And so these are the types of things that, you know, there's always another one down the road. And these are the things we're looking for, and we innovate. And this is kind of where you're looking for those unmet needs, right? You're really trying to think like what do my customers care about? And, you know, what are they saying? And I think the saying goes, what customers say, what customers do, and what customers say they do are never the same thing.
Correct.
Right? So true. Yeah.
I've had situations in the past where we've done surveys with literally thousands of people in the casino industry when we were in the casino business. And what they say they want and what they really want and what they respond to are all different. You know, everybody thinks that they want something, but when they get it, it's never really what they want. It's kind of a strange expectation of what something might seem on the other side. Greener, the grass is always greener on the other side, I guess is probably the phrase that most correlates to that. But when you give it to them, you would expect they're going to be overwhelmed. And they're just like, this sucks. it's bizarre.
Yeah. And I think it's the thing that we encounter most with our clients, because they come with us, and this is like how we are in our personal lives too. They come to us and they self-diagnose. They think they know the problem. Look, these are smart people, right? Like, and we're all like, you know, smart people. We're working hard. We have a lot of experience. So it's not to say that they're not intelligent by any means, but like, they just rush to diagnose the problem. We do that in our personal life. And I think in the example you just gave, they think they know the problem, but they probably don't know how to like really go back and identify the problem and articulate that. So they say they want something else and you give it to them, and that's unsatisfying. That doesn't resolve the issue. And that's what happens a lot for us and clients. So we take them through all sorts of ideation and processes and workshop processes to try to uncover those ideas and figure that stuff out.
Yeah. Well, that sort of dovetails into my last question, which I think you might have answered a bunch of them already, but what do you think customer loyalty looks like in the future? Because normally I would kind of ask a question like this, Mark, and say, you know, what could customers do now to attract and retain more customers, you know, on a loyalty basis? But I'm going to dovetail that into actually, what does loyalty in the future look like to you?
Yeah, I think loyalty, it's tough, right? Like, and so I don't live in the same, and I have very little experience with some of the things that you're talking about in terms of points programs. But, you know, I don't think people really care about brands. And I think that's really, really tough. And so I think we're always on this treadmill of trying to feed them something that they care about. So I think the way that we retain them is we offer them value beyond our products and services. How do we do that? We're seeing like all, you know, people are doing podcasts, people are creating content, people are trying to stay relevant. They're doing all sorts of experiences and pop-up experiences. And this is all just a way to stay relevant so that someday when they, you know, I'm thinking about a pair of running shoes right now, someday when I have to buy another pair of running shoes, because how many times do I buy running shoes? Not that often, right? A couple times a year at best. So I'm not waking up every morning being like, oh, I wonder what's going on in the running shoe world and my market, you know, like, so like people have to stay. You could apply that to any product. No one's waking up being like, hey, I wonder what's going on in Mark's brand strategy business today and how he can help me, you know, like they're not thinking that way. So we create content, we stay relevant. But like, this will be kind of controversial. Like, I don't think people really care about brands. Like, I think if Apple went away tomorrow, we'd be like, meh, and then we'd figure something else out, you know? Like, we'd be sad for a little bit, but we wouldn't crumble. We wouldn't go into the fetal 100%. Position and, like, you know, we wouldn't, like, cry about it. We would, you know, we'd find something else to fill our time.
But I would say this, if, and I can't say this is me personally, but I think if social media was to evaporate, I saw something the other day. Somebody said that Facebook was down for a while or something. There was some meme that people were flipping out about it. I didn't even know because I'm not on Facebook maybe two times, three times a year. But, you know, if that was gone, there would be a shitstorm. People always are around this social media following. They want to follow people. I think it's kind of living vicariously through them. You know, I don't know how that really dovetails into anything about loyalty, but maybe it does. But nonetheless, it's an interesting world that we live in now. And one thing I just did want to touch on too, when we talked about the replacement of something with something better, you know, you talked about Uber, you talked about Airbnb. It's quite a controversial topic, but you think about cryptocurrency. So the blockchain technology, the underlying technology, obviously, I think is irrefutable. People understand the value of it. I've invested in some companies that do the underlying technology stuff with smart contracts, which is really fascinating. I mean, it'd be like, instead of, you know, you buy your property there in Boulder, Colorado, or wherever you're at, instead of going through the process of a deed and title search, it's already in the blockchain. Irrefutable that you're the owner, right? So there's things like that and shipments and stuff. But when it comes down to the actual currency, I think the US is going to end up trying to thwart it because they're going to be losing control over the monetary policy, which is, you know, a shit show to say the least. But when you mentioned before about the new innovations of Airbnb and Uber and the like, I think cryptocurrency is probably that next big frontier. And it's kind of a scary thing. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's super cool. I mean, I'm a little bit familiar with blockchain. I talk about it and I understand it. And I've also invested in some cryptocurrency. But I can even just give you an experience. Like, I tried to open up a bank account with Wells Fargo not that long ago. And it was, and I have several accounts with them. So like theoretically, I feel like I should just be able to go in there and open up another account. I went online. I spent like an hour filling out forms. I thought I was done. I then start getting phone calls. They're putting the onus back on me to get in touch with this banker who's never there. We're going back and forth, back and forth. I then have to make an appointment. I get so frustrated. I have to make an appointment at my bank. I have to go sit with a banker. She sits with me and I'm just sitting there like pulling my hair out. And she's like, I sent her all the information. She should have it. She's typing it in, like do it, like getting up from her desk, getting printouts. Like, I mean, I'm just about to like lose my mind. And I can't even tell you, like, I think it took like 6 weeks to get a bank account.
What?
It took, because of all the back and forth, that's how long it took me by the time I went from online. I had to get an appointment. It wasn't like I get one next day, like, you know, and I was like, this is the craziest thing ever, right? And then you have things like, you know, blockchain. You have things like crypto where you're able to move money around and do it. And I was just thinking, like, all these other countries, all these other people, like I'm privileged. I can go get a, like, that was my experience getting a bank account. I can't imagine someone trying to get a bank account who like is scared to do it and it's intimidating and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, I think the regulation, while the spirit of it was probably a good thing to like avoid fraud and terrorism and all this stuff, yeah. It's like, it's just like a lot of things in the government, right? We don't have to get political, but it gets spun out of control. It gets so thick. And I think that's where innovation continually comes from. It's this unmet need. It's like, you are old and slow and holding us down. And anytime those things happen, there's going to be an industry that's going to pop up. I don't care if it's blockchain. I don't care if it's, you know, the taxi industry. We're seeing it all the time. And, you know, if people aren't, you know, it is a little bit something better, but it's also this idea, like, I kind of always have this vision in my head that we have like the world spinning, right? And then we have like categories and, you know, we're always looking for alignment, but the world's always moving. And if you're not, as a business, moving with the world and staying relevant and staying on top of technology and what people want and how people interact. I mean, geez, like, you know, kids today, their whole life is just going to be one ledger of subscriptions, right? They're never really going to own anything. They're just going to have a ton of subscriptions. The music they're always going to have. I mean, you know, I come from a generation where we like owned our music physically. Yeah. You know, we like, I owned my vehicle. I didn't have a subscription to a car. People are doing that. And that's just where we're going. So again, you know, I'm kind of getting off topic a little bit here, but you know, to your point, yeah, I think things are moving fast. I think that that's a crazy, innovative, cool market. I've also had other ideas for validation. I think of like the healthcare industry, right? I've had some aging parents and they sit in the hospital for days waiting for insurance clearance and everything. Yeah. Like, why can't you just put that on blockchain and have instant validation, right? Yeah. Like, it would just be like, boom, it would help my parents, my loved ones, but it would also save it would have saved like 3 days in the hospital, right? Yeah. Which if you factor that, you know, financial cost across the industry, I mean, geez, probably could revolutionize all of healthcare.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. I know we're not going to get political. We're wrapping this up now. But when you think about the bureaucracy of what happens, you know, what really aggravates me is what really grinds my gears. Take a line from Peter Griffith on the Family Guy. What really grinds my gears is the fact that hospitals advertise on national television. You know what the cost is to advertise on national television? Super expensive. But they're advertising like, come to our hospital, we're the best. Where they're supposed to be thinking about the Hippocratic Oath of just taking care of the people, doing it at cost. But it's an institution, a money-making institution. So to that point, Mark, the reason that they don't want you out of there in 3 days is because they're banging the insurance companies on a regular basis. And they don't want it fixed. So that's the paradox. You know, I mean, someone will come out and fix it, just like they did with Uber, and just like Airbnb is disrupting that sort of tech, you know, that space. But it would be interesting to see what happens, because the powers that be would think otherwise. So we'll see. Anyway, I want to thank you for your time. If listeners want to get a hold of you, Mark, what's the best way they could do that?
Yeah, Rob, people ask me that all the time. And thanks for asking. I think the easiest way is, why don't you just have your listeners shoot us an email. You might be in the car listening to this running. I want to make this really easy for you. Just goodstuff@wildstory.com. Just put Loyalty Podcast or Rob's name in the subject. You don't have to write anything in the email. And we'll go ahead and send you the good stuff. And what that typically is we have a free 3-minute health audit, ways to connect with me on social. This is really a great way to take that first step in your branding journey and kind of figure out, we talked about different areas of the business where we might be able to help. And these are all ways that you can get in touch with us and kind of get in our loop and learn more about branding and brand storytelling and how it can impact your business.
Awesome.
That's goodstuff@wildstory.com.
Good stuff. I'll put it in the show notes. Goodstuff@wildstory.com. Excellent. Well, Mark, again, I want to thank you for your time and sharing your valuable insights. I know we went on some tangents, but it was an interesting conversation. I think our listeners will definitely enjoy it. If they did enjoy it, I would definitely appreciate a 5-star review on your favorite podcast streaming service. It helps the channel grow. To listen to this and other Loyalty Minute episodes, please visit theloyaltyminute.com. Enjoy. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me. It's great.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for your next edition of the Loyalty Minute.